Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local Brisbane area traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugurpul peoples, the Yugambeh, Malanjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, it's another beautiful day on the Daly River in the Northern Territory, in the community of Nyoo. Blue sky, sunshine. Parents and children are starting to move around. Workers are starting to head off to work. And the community is slowly waking up. And it's cold up here for the locals. I don't know what the temperature is. It's probably about 20 degrees or so. But people are saying it's cold. And it is cold. It's only a wet and dry season up this way. Just like Cape York. It's wet and dry. And those of us from down south, the crew from 98.9 and Triple A training, are loving the weather, of course. Walking around with very little clothes. No, not little clothes on. They're fully dressed, but they're not rugged up. Whereas the locals are sort of walking around a little bit cool with jackets on and pulling the blankets out and stuff like that. Whereas we're still turning the fans on and having them, keeping us cool. So it's just magical climate. It's a beautiful place to be. A community of some 600 odd or so. And it certainly is nice to be here. A live broadcast again tomorrow from Nyoo for Let's Talk. My first guest today, Chris Hill, the Shire Services Manager. Chris joined me yesterday briefly, but today we're going to talk about the housing upgrade that's taken place. Chris, welcome to Let's Talk and thanks for joining us again.
Good morning, listeners. Good morning, Tiger.
Chris, tell us about housing here. Betty Sullivan said housing is an issue. There's overcrowded housing. And is hoping for new houses to be built. But at the moment, you've got a housing upgrade taking place. Tell us about that.
That's correct. In Daly River, we have 64 empty houses. A number of these are all block-built houses and constructed about 20 years ago. At the present time, in conjunction with Vic Daly Shire and the empty housing, we have a program valued at about $2.5 million to upgrade some of these houses. Actually, all these houses, one way or another, will have some work done on them. Some will be extensive, where the kitchens are being replaced, new roofs, new solar systems, and complete paint out. Some, which are in better condition, will have slightly less work done. The great advantage of this program is it's been organised and run by the community itself. At the present time, we employed 12 local young men to come in and work on this community, this program. And these young men, in many cases, had no experience in the building trade or any experience, in fact, for working, and had issues in regard to having stable jobs. Now, these gentlemen have been trained to work within the beginnings of a building industry. At the present time, they're doing painting, and they're doing a really, really excellent job. And I invite your crew, in fact, to go and have a look and see some of the work they're doing there. Yes, our community does have issues overcrowding, but Every town, small town in Australia has issues of overcrowding. But we do hear in many regards negative stories about communities. But I think Daly River, Nyoo is a good news story. It's a community that works in cooperation with each other. It's a strong community, and as you've made many times earlier, that it's a clean, neat community, and there's energy here. People here are moving to the future. We're not looking back and being concerned about the past. We're moving to the future and what the future can bring us.
Now, certainly a great story. And look, it was negligent of me to not recognise the traditional owners, the Mulluk Mulluk people of this area. So I do pay respect and recognise the traditional owners, the Mulluk Mulluk people here of Nyoo area. Chris, with the skills that this team acquire, or the skills they develop on this program, Does that put them in a position to be able to assist with the maintenance, ongoing maintenance work in time? How does that maintenance work take place? You have to ship people out normally. What do you see?
Yes, we're looking forward to receiving more finance to extend the amount of work doing in the community. We're looking at doing hopefully a fencing program further down the track, and also going to other communities and helping with their maintenance programs as well. It's a first step on many of these young people to learn work skills and to understand what expectations are for coming to work and to do those work skills. And and whoever you speak to in this program, these young people are doing just a massively wonderful job, and we're so proud of them.
The floods, they obviously shorten the lifespan of houses, of the construction, the buildings and that around the area. How do you deal with that?
I've been here for 4 years, and I've been through three what they classify as major floods. One flood in 1998 was the worst flood on record, which done extensive damage within the community. The 2011 flood was nearly as bad. Now, it's a strange scenario that the people in this community are very accepting and used to floods. It happens every year. We have an excellent coordination with the police and the emergency services and the community itself. We do go for a very good routine, a very excellent routine. It does affect the houses, yes, but the houses were built for coping with flood scenarios. They were all block houses. And there's a set routine that if the water goes into the houses, once the floods are received, we bring in a crews, they're all washed out, repainted if necessary, and we're back to our normal system. The issue of our community, the community itself was built into a floodplain, which was a decision, obviously, which was made 20, 30, 40 years ago. And this is something we have to deal with on a yearly basis. But, of course, the Daly River, as we know, can be a beast in times, but is our friend in many times. It's a beautiful river, and just to promote the river and the area, it's the best barrow fishing river in Australia. We have wonderful fishing camps in the area as well. So, you know, if there's anyone out there who wants to catch that meter barrow, this is a place to come.
I'm certainly keen, Chris. Next time you're chucking a line in, you might let me know. I'll come with you. But look, anyway, I'm still waiting to meet my first barra, mate. You know, I go to the fish shop down there in Woolloongabba. That's where I meet my barra. Insurance. We've just seen in Brisbane major issues with the last big flood about 2 years ago, where households and businesses cannot reinsure. Do you have that issue? I mean, you got the threat of a flood every year here. So how are you affected by insurance?
Well, I'm pleased to say that's not a concern of a Shire service manager. That issue is resolved by my regional office, and my understanding there is no issue with insurance within the community at all.
Very fortunate.
Yeah.
We might have to get some of the people down there into Brisbane to negotiate with some of those insurance companies there, because there's a lot of people that are just walking away. They can't do anything with their properties. Any other developments taking place you'd like to talk about?
Well, obviously, this weekend we have the Marapan Festival. It's going to be a great day. We're going to have maybe 2,000 people here. Lots of activities, football, softball, basketball. It's a great weekend. And with the Marapan Arts Festival and the concert tomorrow, Saturday night, Wendy Matthews, it's a great weekend to come, and it's beautiful weather.
Alcohol. There's a lot of news about alcohol in communities. Is it a dry community? Is it a wet community? I noticed an outlet, a pub, a kilometre or two away. Any issues? Like, is it a dry community? What's the situation?
Daly River is a dry community. If you want to bring alcohol in here, you have to get a permit from the local police station. The local alcohol outlet is owned by the community itself, by the local people within the community. It has very restricted alcohol sales. Alcohol, like everywhere, every small town you will go to in Australia, there is an issue. Alcohol and drugs is an issue, but these issues are being dealt with and looked at, and we have wonderful cooperation with our local police, and everyone is trying to resolve the issue.
So you can go and have a beer if you wish. Are you allowed takeaways to take away from there? But there's no grog allowed on community.
That is correct, yes. No grog allowed on the community itself.
And Chris, it's not only small communities that have problems with grog. Look at Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne. Wicked of a night time, Friday, Saturday nights. It's just shocking. It's certainly knocking a lot of young people around and older people. A lot of injuries. Chris, anything else you got to say?
No, that's it. Thank you very much, yes.
Mate, thanks for joining us. It's good to have you again take time out and come and join us. You certainly can.
I didn't mention this, and I would like to thank all the staff who works in Daly for Vic Daly Shire and all the other staff. They may call me a Shire service manager, but really we're one big team. And without the staff here, we couldn't achieve what we've achieved in the last few years. Thank you.
Good on you, mate. Now, you've got to have a good team behind you, that's for sure. Thank you very much for joining us today. Chris Hill, Shire Services Manager, a busy man, especially this weekend with the festival happening, taking place. And we're broadcasting live. This program, Let's Talk, is broadcasting live under the shade of a tree on the front lawns of the Shire Council office block. In that building, well, they got court today, so they'll be here in court. There'll be a couple of people. I'm waiting for my name to be called out to come in and front the judge. No, only Gammon. No, it won't be calling me out, I don't think. I hope not anyway, unless they track me down. But there's a big room there where court's held in the Shire office building, the RIBS, the local remote Indigenous broadcast service, the radio. That's happening here in the community as well. And now I've got a bloke whose name suits his nature, Tony Goodfellow. Tony, how are you?
Good, thanks, Tiger. Thanks for letting me come on your little show here.
Mate, it's good to meet up with you over here. Whereabouts are you from originally?
Originally from Ballarat down in Victoria. It's a cold, cold place. And now I'm working in Wattair, and there's a fair few people from Ballarat. So there's something about the cold that's moved everyone. Yeah.
Yes, I'm certainly appreciating this beautiful climate. It's getting a bit cool down in Brisbane where you've got to pull the doona up over you. Tony, what's your job over there at Wattair?
Well, at the moment it's running the local TV and radio station. It's quite unique that it's a community that has its own station. We can produce local material in local language, which is in Murrumpata, and put it on. And just working with local stories or local news events and chuck it on. Yeah.
So you're working with people that are telling stories and even radio programs in their local language.
That's right, yeah. I've been told that the local language, Murrin Pata, which means Murrin language, Pata means good, means the good language, is the only growing Indigenous language in Australia. I'm not sure of that, but it would seem like that in Wattair. Yeah, it's doing quite well.
Why, when you say people think it's growing, is it younger ones picking it up? Is it new members or people in community that are wanting to learn the language? How's it growing?
Well, sort of both there. There's lots of people from different clans that originally spoke different languages that are now speaking Murrumpata. So by being a growing language, there are some languages being lost as well, like Murrinjebbin and some languages nearby here, the Muluk, yeah. But it's taken off, yeah. It's quite a beautiful language, and I'm told it's as complicated as ancient Greek, the grammatical structure, yeah.
Interesting. You learning any of the language, picking up some of it yourself, are you?
Bits and pieces, yeah. Like, for example, lightning cloud is kalak kalak, and frogs, duraket, and rainbow, kanam kek. There's lots of onomatopoeia in the language, which is it's quite beautiful.
What's onomatopoeia?
Oh, it's words that sound like the thing they describe. So I have a friend who, the reason I actually went to Wattair was to be a beekeeper with a local, it's like a bee that's only found up in the tropics, Australian bee. the jitai. And he's,
what is that little black one, a little native bee? Or a particular type of native? Is there a number of different types of native bee in this country, is there?
There's about 1,200 different species, but only two of those actually are social and produce honey. And one's called Trigona, and it's found up in the tropics. I believe it's you can find it in Brisbane as well, but it's up in Wadair, and that's what brought me there. This ranger fella, who's also he has a doctor in birds, so he's an ornithologist, and he was telling me to get back to Onomatopoeia. He was telling me that locals, you could travel in different places with different indigenous languages and still be able to identify the animals through the onomatopoeia of the language. Yeah, so
that's very interesting.
Getting back to that.
You sound like an educated bloke. Did you go to university and all that sort of stuff, did you?
I did. Sadly, didn't help me. I went to uni and then became a beekeeper after that. Yeah.
And so you've gone to Wadair for the bees. Was there a plan to actually create or establish some hives and stuff like that, was there?
Yeah, that's right. Like, the reason why I went out is because I had some experience beekeeping, and the rangers there wanted to experiment with native beekeeping as a ecological indigenous enterprise. And so I was working with locals and local knowledge and all that, and so they didn't have any. We had to go out with locals and find wild hives, and usually they're found in ironwood trees, which are really hard to crack open, and put them in boxes, move them, and just start the process of the domestication of the bees, or trying to figure out how to get the honey and stuff like that. Yeah.
Now, there's a particular role, Tony, for that little bee, which you will know all about. I've only been told stories by some of my old people. But the English bee is, 20 times the size of the little native bee. So it's very, he cannot, that big English bee, as well as biting you, stinging you, and giving you a hell of a shock, they can't get into the small flowers to be cross-pollinating and all this sort of stuff. So the little native bee, he's got a real purpose, a real role to play.
Sure. Definitely. Some flowers can't be pollinated, and the flowers, the European bee or Apis mellifera, the flowers it can pollinate, it has a bigger range than the native bees. So it makes less diversity in species, the ones that it can pollinate as well. So, and it also will displace other insects, so which will end up displacing birds. So it has a greater effect. Yeah. I've heard the native bee beekeeping, it has taken off with pollination a bit down your way. But honey production, not so much, because with the European bee, you can make 70 kilograms of honey. But with the Trigona, the Australian one, it's about 2 kilograms. But I have to say, if there's anyone out there, you should get into it. Just give it a crack. And the best honey I've ever tried is the mangrove honey. It's real dark and delicious. Yeah.
Nice one. Now, bees, the role of bees across the board, Tony, is quite important. If bees are wiped out, and I've been told a few stories that the population of bees worldwide appears to be diminishing due to a whole range of things taking place. But if there's no bees, we've got none of this pollination of flowers, so we're going to lose a lot more of the flora, I imagine.
Yeah, lots of crops need bees to be pollinated. That's true. What you refer to there is the colony collapse of the European bee. It's not all bee species, so it's mainly the European bee to do with pollination. But yeah, there's a couple of different factors. But Australia hasn't been hit so hard by that, because we don't. In other countries, they push the hives to a point. They'll selectively breed them for honey production instead of being grooming themselves. There's different factors you can selectively breed them for. And so in the States, they've pushed them just for honey production, and it was on a brink that it could collapse if anything changed. And so there was a little bit of the weather was a little bit different couple of seasons, and also there was a new pest that was introduced, a little beetle, so that sort of pushed them over. Hello. Yeah, yeah. And we had our own problems with the sugar bag, that's what the native bees called, or jitai. We had this little pest called a wasp mimic, and that would get in and lay little eggs, and it killed a fair few of our hives, and we were trying to figure out how to get around that. Yeah.
What'd you work out?
We'd get them and put them in a box, and then put a bag around it, because the wasp mimic lays eggs around the hive and they hatch and they go inside. So that was one way. It wasn't perfect solution. Yeah, and you have to be clean when you're moving it, so there's no spilled honey and stuff to try to stop the wasp mimic coming.
Tell us about Wadair. I believe it's one of the five or six largest towns or centres in the Northern Territory. So it's not a small community. It's quite big.
Yeah, no, it's massive. Before I went there, I actually hadn't heard of it, which is pretty bad because I have read a few newspapers in my day. And I thought it'd just be a few houses, but it turns out it's massive. Yeah, it's huge.
What's the population, you think?
I'm told it's like 2,000 or 3,000, but I'm told as well it's the second largest remote community in Australia. So,
what would be the largest, you think?
I think it's near Cairns, a community.
All right. Where? What? Yarrabah. I'm being told, yeah, Yarrabah is it's about 3,000 or so over there. Yeah. And they're listening in today. Yep, good day, Yarrabah, and good morning to Yarralin too, over here, drive up the road a bit. Yarralin mob, good day to you, mob. And BBM, Cairns, Yarrabah mob, good day to you, mob. Tony, what else is with Wadair? They've got a high school in the community, I imagine. Unlike some of the communities around here, where the communities are that small, they got to send their kids off to boarding school and stuff. What's the situation in Wadair for schooling, high schools?
I think like lots of communities, they're trying to get as many kids as they can to come. Like that's one challenge I think the school's finding. So we're trying to work, like, because I'm working for TV and radio, I'm trying to do as much as I can to try to get attendance up. Yeah. So that's one challenge in Wadair.
But part of the issue with attending school is the appropriateness of what's being taught in the classrooms. I believe myself, from my own observations, I'm the president of our own community school in Brisbane, the relevance of classroom activity, how relevant it is in the community, to families, to people, and then opportunities for employment. If there's little opportunity for employment, there's little incentive to have to go to school.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I don't really know enough about the curriculum of the school to be able to give. But I, you know, like everything, the local people should have local governance and local say, direction of where the community's going. I know lots of the people in Wadair like spend a lot of time trying to figure out where to go in the future, you know, and they just need a way to be able to express that, you know, be able to through governance or education of young people or things like that. Yeah,
mate. Look, one of the other things we're hearing that I've heard over the years with Wadair, there's a big what do you call it? Like groups, the young fellas. The heavy metal groups or something or other. What's that? Tell us about that. Like you get groups supporting, different family groups will support a particular band or a something like that. What's that story?
It's pretty funny. Like when I first arrived, you look around and start seeing graffiti for bands that they're not really popular anymore. Like you might find Fear Factory or Judas Priest, Man of War. Who else? Who else do we have? Pantera. They seem to be bands from the 80s. And you just... There's another one called German. It's like really obscure band. Like I hadn't heard of them before.
Well, where does Mob get to hear about these bands?
It's a really good question. And I think Firstly, they're there because they've been put there by young fellas as a mark of territory, because there's what some people call gangs, but it's more like family groups. It's like a new identifier instead of like a tribal family or something. And but it coincides, I think, when TV was first switched on in What Air in the early 80s with Rage. I think that's it. Like, it just had such a big impact. Like, the media and radio included, we've got to be careful, because we're quite powerful, and you don't realise that sometimes, you know.
I remember the discussions back in those early days in the 80s about when the RIBS, they were BRACs in those days, broadcast for remote Aboriginal communities services, the threat to culture and language and the introduction of European ways and things like that. Just there was a real concern. And now we've got Dwayne. Dwayne, how are you, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm real good. You joined me a couple of days ago on Radio A.
Yeah, on Tuesday.
On Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're living at Pine Creek, and you come from Timber Creek, eh?
Yeah, moved down on September. Yeah, last year. So it's been about 8 months now.
Now, you're the fella, I'll just remind listeners, you're the fella that went to school down in Victoria.
Yeah, in Ballarat. Yeah, it's been 2 years there. Yeah, it's colder.
How long have you been out of school?
Been out of school since 2009. Yeah, that's why.
What, so you're only 20, 21?
Yeah, 21. Yeah, turning 22 on the 30th of June.
Again, remind me, your job over there, Pine Creek, what are you doing?
I do sport and rec and youth engagement, but I do help out aged care a bit.
So you're telling me, if you're working with aged care, you're also working with young kids too, school kids and stuff.
Yeah, do school kids and kids, you know, under five. Yeah. Yeah, do playgroup and after school care. And, yeah, you know, kids there from 10 to 25.
And then aged care as well. What do you do with aged care, Mob?
Well, they usually go shopping at Catherine. So we take them up every morning on Thursday to Catherine, do their shopping. And
then you got a good job. You're working with the little ones. You're working with 10 to 25s. You help with the old people. How far is Catherine from Pine Creek?
It's about 90 km, but, you know.
Okay. So it's fairly close. And it's bitumen road all the way?
Yeah, bitumen all the way.
Yeah. All right. So with your little ones, the young ones, you're working with them, Mob. What do you do with them, Mob?
The playgroup or...
Yeah, playgroup.
I haven't got any yet, but I was thinking about just getting, you know, normal softball game and all that.
Yeah.
Just let them roll it around and, yeah, get them all sitting down talking and play together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you also have little yarns with some of them young followers about sexual health and stuff too.
Yeah, I do. They, you know, don't want to talk about it much, but, yeah, just try to find a fun game with it. And, yeah, I got a mate that showed me a game that he does. And yeah.
What are some of the things you tell him?
I probably wouldn't want to say it on here, but...
But you let them know how important it is to be aware of the issues with sexual transmitted... infections and things like that, I suppose, eh?
Yeah, I do, and I did show them that what my boss gave me was a box for, you know, with condoms and all that.
Now, it's very important. We run a lot of sexual health awareness campaigns on our station in Brisbane, and the main message is safe sex, you know. Is certainly use of condoms and just safe sex, because there's too many risk around. What do you do when you're not doing all this work with young ones, with the aged care mob, with sport and rec? What do you do in your leisure?
Well, probably be, you know, going out fishing, hunting, or playing my Xbox. Yeah.
With hunting, what's your favourite with hunting? What do you like to go chasing?
Kangaroo is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the best part of kangaroo you like to eat?
The tail.
How do you cook the tail?
Oh, just in a fire. Yeah, just put them on the coal, let them roast up, and...
Do you wrap him up in anything, or you just leave him, like, you put him skin on and all, or what?
Yeah, skin all. Yeah, watch it peel off, and the meat come out good.
Very nice. You didn't happen to bring any with you, did you?
No, we didn't.
All right. And what about with the fishing? I mean, is it only barramundi or what?
No, it's barramundi, catfish, shark, and, you know, every other fish. Yeah, most go for stingrays and, you know, more. But, yeah, barra's the biggest hit around here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, and also brim.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's a sea brim, saltwater one?
No, just black brim or silver brim.
Okay.
Yeah.
With the, you're doing training at the moment. You've been, you were just saying, you've been, the other day you said you'd like to learn camera work and stuff. What do you see the use? How would you put that to use if you knew, when you learn how to use camera, transfer it on a computer, or do your editing?
Well, it'd probably be good for the sexual help and all that. You know, probably a good way to get them talking about it and showing it in camera work and all that. Yeah, or, you know, if we go out hunting and all that, it'd be a good way to show how, you know, how to use the camera at bush and get a good picture and put it on video, probably put add music on it as well.
Yeah. So you'd like to show some of the other young fellas that you work with and other people in the community?
Yeah, with all ages, but not, you know, the younger one, from 10 to 25.
Yeah. No, it certainly sounds interesting. And you like being able to use a camera and stuff?
I'm not much into technology, but, yeah, camera's always fun.
Yeah. You'll have a crack at it, eh?
Yeah, I'll always have a crack.
What about radio, the Ribs? Do you you have a radio station where you are, the Ribs?
We don't have a radio station out in Pine Creek, but...
What about Timber Creek, your hometown?
No, there's no radio station, but we do, you know, channel in. And listen to everyone else.
How do you do that when you say channeling?
Oh, I just get in the car or, you know, bring out the stereo out.
So who can you listen to? Who do you pick up when you say, oh, we'll listen to this radio program? Who are you listening to? Where are they broadcasting from?
I think Alice Spring with Karma Radio. Yeah, I think that's the biggest one in, you know.
All right. Do you see yourself working around in communities for some time yet? Like, you got no intention of going back down Victoria and getting back into the snow or the scuba diving and stuff like that?
I'll think about going back there, but...
What, just for holiday?
Yeah, just for a holiday visit and...
You'd have a few friends down there?
Yeah, they keep asking me to go down. Yeah. So, been trying to go down.
You bring any of them up this way for a look around?
We did 2 years ago. Yeah, one of them came up. Yeah,
that'd be a lot different for them. What they think?
We took them out fishing to a sacred site, and yeah, they caught their first barra.
All right.
Yeah.
With the barra, you say you're cooking that kangaroo tail on the coals. With the barra, how you cook a barra when you're out in the bush?
Well, I like them on the coal as well. Just throw them on and watch the skin peel off.
So that saves you having to scale them and stuff, eh? You just put them on the coals and the skin peel off with all the scale.
Yeah, it does. It's more easy with, you know, also with the alfoil, if you wrap them up.
Yeah, all right, yeah. What about other bush tucker? Any fruit, berries, different things going around that you know you can eat?
Yes, also what you call green plum. That grows on tree every, you know, wet season, and there's the bush potato. And, yeah, there's more.
That's not a green plum on this tree, yeah? What's some little round green fruit here? Look, hanging there. No, what's it?
I don't know what that is.
Yeah. All right. All right, then. Anything else you want to tell us?
Not that I can think of. Not yet.
What about sport? You an AFL player?
No, I'm not that good at AFL.
What any sport you like?
Well, my brothers are good at AFL and every other physical sport. Yeah, I'm more into motorsport, like, you know, V8 supercar and all that.
You like to drive? You got a license?
Yeah, I got a license. As soon as I got my license, I went out driving. Yeah.
So So you like watching the V8 Super Sports and stuff with them racing, car racing around?
Yeah, always a Ford fan.
Oh, you're a big Ford fan. Well, you wouldn't be too happy with the big news that Ford's closing down.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
Not too good, I think.
Hey, yeah, not too good. No more Ford being made. That's not good at all.
Make my own then.
You can make your own.
Yeah, restart the, you know, Ford company again.
Yes, no, it's certainly something's going to have to be done. No more Ford. That's not good. Dwayne, thanks for joining us, my brother. It's good to have you sit down and tell us more about your job. I mean, the work that you do when you're working with young people, you're working with the aged care, you help raise the understanding and awareness of sexual health issues with young people. I mean, that's, and sport and rec with health and fitness and that. You do a lot in that community. It's really good to be able to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, eh?
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks, Pat.
That's Dwayne. What's your last name?
Jones.
Dwayne Jones. I knew that. I just wanted to make sure he remembered. Dwayne Jones from, he's working in Pine Creek, but he come from Timber Creek. And he's quite a knowledgeable young man, by gee. Thank you, Dwayne. And the work that this young fellow, he's 20-year-old, not turned 21 yet. He's 21, but he's turning 22. I got that wrong. See, he's only still a young man. And did his year 12 down there in boarding school down Victoria Way. And he's got a lot of potential, a lot of promise in this young fella. I think he might end up being the mayor of Vic Daly Shire one day. You never know. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, I hope so. He can run 4 p.m. All good.
Why not? Why not? I've got Kevin Starbuck joining me today. Kevin, welcome to the program. How are you?
Very good, Tiger. And it's beautiful being back in Daly. I love it here.
Oh, it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place. Now, what's your role here? What's your job?
Tiger, I'm the RIPS coordinator for all our communities around Vic Daly Shire Council. And yeah, I look after radio and retransmission of TV. So, big job, but enjoyable.
So how many RIBS? And RIBS, I must remind people, is the Remote Indigenous Broadcasting Services. They're the small community radio stations. How many have you got under your control?
I've got, in Yatalin, I've got a radio and a retransmission station and 2 RIBS employees there. And I'll say good morning, Sabdin and Junior. Hope you're listening. And then in Kalkaringi, Dagaragu, 2 retransmissions and 1 studio. Timber Creek, only retransmission. Pine Creek, retransmission. Daily studio and retransmission. Wadai TV and radio. Pepe and Pulampa television and radio. So in total, I've got about 14 staff working all around the Shire.
People be wondering, what's the accent? Where about you from?
South Africa. I used to work with an NGO called Love Life and also doing radio in remote areas throughout South Africa.
So, yeah, and you've got sort of fairly broad experience over there. You've worked with live music and radio station, a whole range of things there.
Yeah, I started my career with the South African Broadcasting Corporation and then went on to actually work with BBC Simra Wales, Doordarshan in India, also up in West Africa, Mozambique, Zimbabwe. So I've travelled all over the world doing radio, TV and audio recordings.
And how do you find it here, especially in remote communities like Nayu and Yarralin and places like that?
The one part I love about this is it feels like I'm in a Kruger National Park. The only thing I do miss is an elephant walking out the bush. But apparently there's been a hippopotamus that was shot not far from here. And I think the locals will have more knowledge of it. But I heard that story, so hopefully it's true.
All right, so there may have been a hippopotamus roaming around and somebody shot the poor bugger, eh? Kevin, you're involved in a bit of in training, trying to pass on or see that a lot of our young ones in communities, and not so young ones on the communities, are being trained in radio and video. What's the relevance of it? Is it important? Is it something that they can continue on with and can grow out in these remote communities?
I believe broadcasting is such a satisfying career to be in and also builds a lot of confidence. And I use Bima, I use other service providers to actually train people to get from cert to diploma. And this week we've got people up to advanced diploma being trained in video photography, editing and radio broadcasting. And yeah, it's given the opportunity to people who never get the opportunity, and they can actually be trained within their own community. I just find it's a bit distracting to go to a big city because lots of people in communities haven't been to big cities. So rather bring the training to them, and we do it here in a more relaxed manner. And also the trainers can see a bit of the community and we can go live like we are now.
Yeah, now certainly a great opportunity to come out to community and do the training. But not so very long ago, a month or two, you and Aaron, one of your trainees, came down to Brisbane for Clancestry. How did that work for you and Aaron?
Clancestry was a big eye-opener, I would say, for Aaron. The reason is he was exposed to mainstream media. We're in a community, you're quite enclosed in your own little studio. But the moment you see the mainstream media, your eyes open wide and you believe there's so much more you can do than only playing CDs and speaking a bit, which is good for local community, but I want our group to actually advance more in their careers.
What about the technical skills, Kevin? Repair and maintenance, transmitter operation, transmitter maintenance, video cameras, all the equipment. What about that? Is there opportunities for people to learn that?
We, at the moment, we're not really concentrating on that. I've got contractors that will go out, we call it the maintenance tour, that we try and do once a year and go around to all our communities, test all the equipment, send away equipment to be fixed. Yeah, but at the moment, we haven't really focused on maintenance for local staff. Hopefully, that will be a project in the near future.
All of these skills and these RIBS centres, they're all essential in small communities. How important are they to you and the people?
I would say the most important part about them is to alert the communities in case of cyclone, floods, emergency relief. So that's very important. But also the entertainment. The community has got their own feeling. It's ours. And we can play our music. So I think it's very essential for the community to have that information broadcast to them and they've got free access to it.
All right, Kevin, it might be getting close to time to wind up. So for Dan back in the studio to pick up a song or two and go out before... thanks for joining us today. And, I mean, thanks for getting us up here. I mean, we saw our first croc yesterday down live on the sandbank there, sunning himself. He's only a small one, about 3 metres or so, just a little one, just about fit on my plate. But... No, it's been really good that we're up here and working with your trainees and people. The hospitality of people in this community is just amazing. I mean, right across the board, people are great. It's a great place to be.
And very important, I would like to thank you guys and Bima that came here and exposed our community daily. And also we're going to Kalkaringi, the Garaga next week. And thank you guys for being here and broadcasting our story over the airwaves.
It's really good, and that's the idea of Let's Talk, going out to community. It's allowing people in community to tell their stories. Kevin Starbuck, thank you very much for joining us today. And a happy birthday. You got to go out to one of our staff down there in Brisbane, KD, or her proper name, Karen Durante, but I've been calling her KD. Happy birthday today. They tell me she's 25 today. Is that a 35 or a 55? No, must be just 25 for Karen Durante. Happy birthday, KD. And again, oh, my big boy, my grandson, he's been sitting in the bath waiting for his pop to say good morning to him. Quaden, good morning, my little man. Poppy's big boy, Quaden Jr. He loves listening to pop on the radio. So good morning to my boy and all my grandsons over there on Stradbroke Island. But good morning to you all. Let's hope you're all having a great day. And join us again tomorrow for another live broadcast from Niyu Community on the bank of the Daly River out southwest of Darwin, Northern Territory. Have a great day and join us tomorrow on your local First Nations station.